He wasn't my biological child. But my heart, you can't tell that to my heart. I love that boy. It's not fair that he was taken from his children or from his family.
Jesse fell for Vince, a man in uniform, holding the fort during his long deployments.
My hat goes off to all military wives. It's not easy.
It's not. She was a good mom. She loved the kids.
Reunited at last, they celebrated. Then, on the drive home.
There was a car there, stranded.
Vince tells his wife that he's going to go check on him.
I heard 2-3 popping sounds.
He was laying there with what appeared to be several gunshot wounds to the head.
Her husband, a father of five, dead. No one could understand it.
The type of person that he was, I don't think he ever had an enemy.
Or did he?
He said, "We are now in debt to bad people."
We knew that there was another person that needed to be looked at.
A winding investigation leading deep into the dark.
This sounds like a love triangle.
I believe it was.
Terrific. Brutal.
I was like, why? Are you kidding me?
I'm Lester Holt, and this is Dateline. Here's Andrea Canning with Evil Was Waiting.
Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Cornfields. Picket fences. And patriotism. Just to the south is Fort Campbell, home to more than 13,000 Army soldiers and their families. After facing danger all over the world, soldiers return to a collective sigh of relief. After all, bad things aren't supposed to happen here. But when one young sergeant returned from a tour in Afghanistan, he had no idea the enemy would be much closer to home.
My husband got out and some guy needed help.
Multiple gunshots to his face and head.
He had only been back from fighting in the war for such a short period of time. It was tragic.
My heart sunk.
Sergeant Vincent Goslin Jr., a 28-year-old father of five, had served in the Army for 7 years as a quartermaster and mechanic.
Did Vince ever express to you what it meant to him to serve his country?
He absolutely loved it.
Tim Hamilton is Vince's cousin. But as he explains it, they were much more than that.
Were you kind of like a big brother to Vince?
Yeah. With him, it was, I don't know how, we had a bond. He had an outgoing personality. He had his crazy little grin. You always knew when he was doing something mischievous.
And Tim recalls the mischief he and Vince got into growing up in a small Michigan town called Cadillac.
We'd go play in the creeks, go fishing. We actually built a raft out of old barrels that we threw in the water and tied sticks to it and never floated, but...
Sounds like Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
But Vince's childhood story wasn't always so idyllic.
Vince's mom left at 8 months old, so he was raised with his dad. I think his dad was married 6 times, so that was a little tough on him.
Janet Madison considered herself Vince's surrogate mom. She says growing up, he spent a lot of time at her house. Her son was Vince's best friend.
He was just like one of the other boys. He was always there. They did everything together.
It seems like you two had quite a connection.
We did.
You and Vince. What was that all about?
I think a lot of it was I never judged him. Vince was, you know, he was the purest tattooed kid, the droopy pants, the spiked hair, and I just treated him just like me and you.
And then one day he came to her with some life-changing news.
Was he scared? Finding out he was going to be a dad?
He probably was scared, but he was afraid that I would be mad at him. And I wasn't mad at him.
Vince had 2 sons from 2 relationships by the time he was 18. But Janet says he only ever saw them as blessings.
How was Vince as a dad?
He was awesome. He changed that diaper. He'd clean up that puke. You know, he didn't care. His kids were his world.
then, someone else entered his world, a hometown girl named Jessie Hull.
Vince loved Jessie unconditional, and you could see it. He was happy. He loved her.
And Janet says he started to settle down, moved in with Jessie's family, and quickly bonded with her dad, a Vietnam vet. He was the one who suggested the military might be a good way for Vince to get on the straight and narrow. So Vince joined the Army in 2005. He was 21 years old.
This is a boy who's gone from baggy pants and spiky hair to now he's going to have the military cut and the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a 180
that
for
is.
Vince.
That is a 180. It's what he needed.
You must have been really proud of him for making that step.
I was always proud of him. I'm still proud of him.
With Vince's career heading in the right direction, he took another big step and popped the question. Jessie said yes.
There was a connection between them two that they loved each other to death. You know, they would argue, and I think they actually just argued just so they could make up.
Well, some people say that's the best part.
It is.
After the wedding, kids soon followed for the happy couple. Two girls and a boy. As a sergeant in the Army, Vince spent a lot of time overseas, so it was up to Jessie to handle the home front and take care of the kids on her own.
It's not easy having a husband who is away. It takes someone special to be able to endure that and get through that.
Tim says somehow Jessie and Vince made it work.
When we'd see him, Jessie and them as a family, they looked like a great family.
By 2012, Vince and Jessie had been married for 6 years. Despite some bumps, Tim thought life was good for Vince and his family. But shortly after returning from Afghanistan, Vince's second tour there, Tim got an unsettling call from him.
The sound of his voice, it was, if something happens, I wanted you to know what's going on, but he wouldn't tell me anything.
A few days later, on February 3rd, Vince and Jessie went out to dinner to celebrate his safe return at a place called O'Charley's. They started driving home, back to the base, then turned off the main drag onto this dark and winding road, Fidelio Road, where evil was waiting.
I don't know where Vince is.
Coming up, a wife's harrowing tale.
I just got on the side of the road. My husband got out to see if some guy needed help.
Soon after, another driver makes an alarming discovery.
I stopped and I tried yelling at him to see if he was awake, alert, something.
It was a moonless February night in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, around 8 p.m., when a frantic call came into 911.
911. Yes. I just got on the side of the road. My husband got out to see if some guy needed help.
Jessie Goslin told the operator that her husband, Sergeant Vincent Goslin, had been shot when he tried to help a motorist stranded on the side of the road. Jessie was hysterical.
Listen to me. Listen. I can't understand a word you're saying. You're going to have to calm down and talk to me.
As she tried to calm down, Jessie told the operator, after being shot, Vince came back to their car but was unable to get in because a man was pulling him back.
My husband tried getting in the vehicle. He couldn't get in the vehicle. He screamed for me to go.
Jessie says she drove away from the scene as her husband had instructed. Minutes later, another 911 call came in.
There's a guy that's been killed. He's dead down the road from my house.
This is the man who made the call. Walter Ferguson said he was getting ready to visit his cousin when he heard the gunshots.
Living around here, we hear a lot of gunshots. So I didn't think nothing of it. I got in my truck, started to come down the road. And as soon as I crest the hill, I saw the truck's lights came on and he just bolted off.
So what did you do when you saw this truck?
Well, I mean, I went and turned around. And as I came back around, I made sure my high beams were on. I ended up seeing his body.
There, on the side of the road, Walter spotted a man lying face down in the dirt.
So I stopped, and I tried yelling at him and talking to him to see if he was awake, alert, something. And I started looking for my phone. I didn't have it on me, so I had to end up zooming back to the house to call 911.
Christian County Detective Ed Stokes raced to the scene.
We were just notified that there had been a shooting on Fidelio Road and one male possibly deceased.
Tell us what you see when you arrive here at the scene.
The first thing that I noticed was Sergeant Goslin's body laying here in the gravel with a large amount of blood around the body.
Could you tell if he had been shot?
We found what appeared to be gunshot wounds to the head and the shell casings laying near the body inside the crime scene backed up the thought that he was shot.
You say he was shot in the head?
Correct.
And the face?
Correct.
Was this personal?
It's personal to me because that person that shot him 9 times wanted him dead.
While Detective Stokes worked the crime scene about a quarter of a mile down the road, deputies were talking to Jesse.
She was hysterical, crying, almost sometimes where you couldn't even understand what she was saying.
There's Jesse on her knees, collapsed on the side of the road.
This was a wife who had clearly been through a traumatic situation.
She had just watched her husband get shot multiple times, yes.
Detectives took Jesse back to the station to get her statement. Her stomach, it seemed, couldn't take the horror she'd just witnessed.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Well, let me go grab a spot for you, son.
By now, Christian County Commonwealth's attorney Lynn Pryor had been notified.
What did you think when you heard that a soldier from Fort Campbell has been gunned down? He's barely been home from his tour of duty.
It hurt. We take a great pride in having Fort Campbell as part of our community. The fact that our soldiers protect us every day, and we wanted to make sure that we got justice for him.
Was Jesse able to describe the person who shot her husband?
She initially described him as a black man, and I believe that's pretty basically all the description she was being able to give.
Jesse also described the killer's car.
What kind of car?
An old one, one of the big ones.
What color was it?
I don't know, like a reddish, brownish color.
It wasn't much for police to go on. And to make it even more difficult, the eyewitness, Walter Ferguson, had seen something different.
Describe the truck that you saw speeding off.
As he passed me, I could see that it was like a white truck, and I saw the 4x4 on it. But that was about as much as I could see on it.
So the witness had seen a white truck, and Jesse said she saw a reddish-brown car. Investigators had a lot to sort out. A murdered soldier, a distraught wife, an unknown motive, and a giant secret about to be discovered.
Coming up, Jesse reveals a bombshell about her husband.
He had told me that he bought a large quantity of methamphetamine. He said, "We are now in debt to bad people."
If this story checks out, that's pretty serious.
If we could prove that, yes.
When Dateline continues.
Was this case a top priority? You have an American soldier gunned down and a shooter on the loose.
Every detective we had was working this case.
Did you worry about the safety of others?
At first, it's always a thought through our mind. Is this a, you know, serial killer? Because we have no motive yet. So yes, it was very important.
Back at the Christian County Sheriff's Department, 25-year-old Jesse Goslin continued to speak to detectives. She was emotionally and physically distraught.
Yeah.
And she kept asking about her husband. Jesse still hadn't been told if he was dead or alive.
Not feeling better?
Not really.
Is there anything you need?
No.
Okay. Okay, just sit there.
I want my mommy. I want my kids.
Finally, the detective came back and broke the news about Vince.
He was pronounced dead at the scene. I'm really sorry for your loss.
The tragic news of Vince's murder spread fast throughout the base and to family members. Janet, Vince's surrogate mother, got a call from Jesse's mom.
And she said,
Janet, there's been an accident. Vince has been shot. And I was devastated. I was like, what? What? What do you mean he's been shot?
Vince's cousin Tim immediately left his home in Virginia and traveled to Kentucky, still in disbelief.
How can he survive two times in Afghanistan and come home to be shot by some worthless thug that didn't even know him?
You must have felt so horrible for Jesse and for the kids.
Absolutely. I must have called her at least 50 times, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and be there for her and the kids.
By now, Jesse had left the Christian County Sheriff's Department and headed home.
She's picked up by a friend, taken back to her house on Fort Campbell.
The day after the murder, local police and agents from Fort Campbell were canvassing the Goslins neighborhood.
This is now a mix of Army investigators and local investigators.
Yes.
They knocked on the door of Kay and William Ray, the couple who lived next door to the Goslins. What they had to say was so compelling, they asked them to immediately come in for an interview.
He said he had some information about something that Miss Goslin had told you pertaining to some trouble her husband was in.
And somehow or another got involved with a drug dealer, at least $20,000 of meth, and got jumped and stole away from him. Well, being that happened, these guys were supposedly after him for the money.
The Rays explained to the investigators Jesse had told them about the drug dealers weeks before the murder.
She seemed worried at all about what was going on?
She's been on pins and needles ever since this has happened. Okay. She's been scared. She's scared for her life and her children's.
Okay. But they ever say who these people were or where these people were from?
Never said a word about that right there.
Later that day, Detective Stokes says Kay Ray convinced Jesse she should talk to military investigators, tell them what she told local police. It turned out to be a fateful decision.
Jesse gets in with the friend, and they go to CID headquarters.
With Kay Ray sitting next to her for support, Jesse gave a detailed explanation about why she turned down that deserted road. She said as they were driving home, she was at the wheel, and she started to feel sick. Vince suggested they pull over.
And he said, there's a road, turn down. I turned down the road. He told me to drive until there was a spot we could pull off.
She said that's when they saw the vehicle with the hood up, and Vince got out to help. Not long after, she heard gunshots.
I heard, like, two, maybe three, like, popping sounds. And my husband rounded the edge of the passenger side of the vehicle. He was trying to get in. And the guy was behind him, and he pulling him back out. He was hitting him. All my husband kept saying was, go drive, go get out of here.
She described a chaotic scene with a random motorist. But then investigators asked her about Vince's involvement with those drug dealers, suggesting perhaps it wasn't so random after all. Jesse told them what she knew.
He had told me that he had bought a large quantity of methamphetamines. He said, we are now in debt to people, to bad people, about $20,000.
We had to check into his drug usage, if we could find anything out from friends, family, if he was using or even dealing drugs.
If this story checks out, I mean, that's pretty serious.
If we could prove that, yes.
While Jesse did her best to give the investigators leads, police working the case in the field got a new lead of their own, and it sent them in a very different direction.
Coming up, did Vince's killer threaten Jesse too?
She was getting text messages from this man?
That's what she indicated, yes. And that he would kill her and her children if she didn't comply with what he was telling her to do.
One day after the murder of Sergeant Vince Goslin, the investigation was unfolding fast. In the field, detectives were gathering evidence and talking to witnesses. And at Fort Campbell, the interview rooms were filling up.
I'm not talking about what you thought might happen.
In one of those rooms, Jesse Goslin.
And you have drug dealers that are after you, you never know what the hell's going to happen.
Jesse had given law enforcement a possible motive for her husband's murder. She said Vince owed money to drug dealers. A lot of money.
Do you know where the drug dealers
are? No, I don't.
Prosecutor Pryor was getting regular phone updates about all the witness interviews. But to her, Jesse's was the most important. Jesse gave police a key new detail. She said on the night of the murder, one of those drug dealers contacted her.
Did you have to talk to the drug dealers directly?
She was getting text messages from this man.
That's what she indicated, yes. And that he would do harm or kill her and her family, her children, if she didn't comply with what he was telling her to do.
That's when Jesse admitted she didn't drive down Fidelia Road because she was feeling sick.
I got a text that told me to turn on the road.
What did the text say? Turn on this road or turn on the next road? What did it say exactly?
It told me to turn on the road after the stoplight.
Okay.
If you're not, your whole family's dead.
She said she felt she had no choice but to go through with what the man said, even though she suspected something bad was about to happen.
I kind of figured it is. Were you down here and you're going to address me?
As Jesse's interview on Fort Campbell headed into its second hour, sheriff's detectives across town were working on tracking down the truck seen leaving the murder scene, figuring if they could find the truck, they would find the killer.
I heard about three or four shots.
Walter Ferguson, the witness who had described seeing a white-colored 4x4 truck speeding down the road, gave police more distinctive descriptions about the vehicle.
The headlights were higher than my hood,
yes,
so they were like in my eyes.
Okay, so kind of lifted. Was it loud? Was it?
It was like very loud.
Detectives quickly found neighbors who told them they'd seen a truck just like that many times in the neighborhood. They searched DMV records and found the truck. It was registered to a former soldier who had lived on base at Fort Campbell, 24-year-old Jared Long.
Jared Long was very much a person of interest at that point.
But he's not on base anymore.
No.
Where is he?
We didn't know.
So Detective Stokes says law enforcement immediately got busy trying to find him.
We actually put an attempt to locate out all surrounding states and counties from here to Colorado where he was from. And in fact, he was stopped by a trooper in Colorado.
He must have really hightailed it out of Kentucky to get to Colorado that fast.
Quick.
When he was pulled over, was he driving a raised white truck?
He was in a light gray Dodge pickup truck that was lifted with large tires and loud exhaust, matching the description of our witness.
So you're thinking you might have your man here?
Yes.
He might have thought he had his man, but police decided the fact that Jared's truck matched the description of the eyewitness wasn't enough to arrest him.
They stalled as long as they could, I think, and ultimately had to let him go.
That's potential evidence driving away. Who knows what's in that truck, what's on his clothes. I mean, it could all be destroyed.
That was all evidence, potential evidence that we wanted to get our hands on and had no ability to do so at that time.
That's tough.
Very tough.
But detectives pressed on, and while trying to figure out who Jared Long was and why he would want Vince dead, they uncovered new information about their main witness, Jesse.
Coming up, Jesse's neighbors reveal that they too had seen Jared's truck outside Jesse's house.
How often would you see that vehicle there over that period of time while Vincent was deployed?
Maybe two or three times a week.
When Dateline continues.
At Fort Campbell, Jesse Goslin was talking to a military investigator, giving possible clues about her husband's killer. Meanwhile, Detective Stokes and others from the Christian County Sheriff's Department thought they were onto something. They believed they'd located the truck from the crime scene and knew the name of the driver, Jared Long. Now, they needed to know why he would be involved in Vince's murder.
Our unit's detectives, along with the CID agents from Fort Campbell, did a neighborhood canvass on post.
And what they discovered was a bombshell. Neighbors said they'd seen Jared's truck, not just in the area, but parked in Jesse's driveway. Kay Ray lived next door.
I would see him driving the truck with her and the three kids. I would see her driving the truck with the three kids.
And what she said next really got the investigators' attention.
How often on a weekly basis would you see that vehicle there over that period of time while Vincent was deployed?
Maybe two or three times a week.
As you looked deeper into this potential relationship between Jared and Jesse, how serious was it?
From what we could gather, they lived together on base. And if Sergeant Goslin came home for any reason, then Jared Long would leave for a couple of days while he was here.
It was stunning. Stokes was now convinced Jesse was not the devoted army wife she seemed to be. Instead, she was at the center of a deadly love triangle.
Both men in love with Jesse.
Correct.
Jesse in love with one man?
I believe so.
To the detective, evidence that Jared and Jesse were a couple was piling up. Like when police ran the plates of the car Jesse was driving the night of the murder.
They came back to Jesse Goslin and Jared Long.
They owned a car together. By now, police had had enough of Jesse's shifting stories and confronted her with what they knew.
Jesse, we know there wasn't a black guy.
There was.
We know that his truck was there.
It was
everything
not,
that
no.
witnesses said has been true.
No.
Yeah, very true.
No.
He told her they knew all about her romantic relationship with Jared. Jesse admitted she and Jared hung out together, but continued to deny there was anything sexual between them.
She said they were friends and he stayed there on the couch and that was it.
Jesse did admit she and Vince were going through a tough time, but she claimed they were working things out.
I've always reassured Vince that I'm not just going to walk away from you.
Yeah.
I'm not that person. I'm not going to leave you.
We were planning on doing marriage counseling. He actually called Friday before we left.
And besides, she said Vince knew all about Jared.
Vince knew that he had been staying at the house.
But investigators didn't believe her. More than 3 hours into Jesse's interview, after repeatedly denying she and Jared had a romantic relationship.
Because we did not have sex.
Jesse finally changed her story.
There was times when I was drunk, yes, I'm sure we had sex.
Yeah. I knew that Jared loved me.
Right.
And I know he loves my kids.
Okay.
He shot him 9 times.
When investigators told prosecutor Lynn Pryor that Jesse had admitted to having a romantic relationship with Jared, she knew this was a big moment.
They were planning a life together.
That could be a motive.
Absolutely a motive. Because who was in their way of being together for the rest of their life? Her husband.
And Jesse had another possible motive. As a military wife, she would receive a big payout from her husband's life insurance policy. $450,000.
She certainly could have benefited greatly from the death of her husband.
Before Jesse's 8-hour interview was over, she had admitted to seeing Jared the day before the murder.
He wanted to meet me at the motel while he was in town. I said, fine. We had lunch and we talked and we didn't have sex.
But it wasn't the sex investigators were interested in. Jesse had one more story to tell. She claimed that Jared had talked to the drug dealers, and if he roughed up Vince, somehow that would satisfy them. Then she said Jared told her what her job would be.
And he told me, you need to meet me on this road. You need to pull down to the shoulder where you can pull off. I'm going to say your husband's straight.
But the prosecutor and detectives weren't buying it. Instead, without realizing it, Jesse had finally given them what they needed.
Why is there now enough to arrest her?
Because she's admitted her part in getting Vincent to the location where he was ultimately killed. In Kentucky, being an accomplice to murder is the same as actually committing the murder.
That grieving wife, hysterical by the side of the road, getting sick in front of police, was charged with her husband's murder.
Let me see your hands.
Now step out of the truck!
As for Jared Long, because of Jesse's admission that she and Jared had a plan to harm Vince, police now had enough to arrest him too. They tracked him down again, this time near his home in Colorado.
They did a felony stop, called him out, made him go prone on the ground, and placed him in cuffs.
They had a warrant to search his truck this time?
Colorado authorities were able to obtain a search warrant for Mr. Long's truck.
They found a shell casing that ultimately was matched to the shell casings found at our murder scene. And they swabbed the truck, which eventually led to evidence that indicated gunshot residue had been left in several places around his vehicle.
Can I ask you to take that seat over there?
Yes, sir.
Colorado police brought Jared in for questioning. Unlike Jesse, he didn't hesitate to talk about his romantic relationship with her.
We hooked up a while back. It was sometime around September. And we started going out, and the next thing I knew, we were living together. I knew she was married. I knew it was horrible, but...
He also admitted to being in Kentucky on the day of the murder, but he says he left before dark.
Where do you think you left?
About 5:30.
What he didn't know was Jesse had already pointed the finger at him.
She has spoken with the detectives, and she has told them about the plan that you guys had.
Excuse me?
But she puts her and Vince and you at the scene. And the witness puts you and your truck at the scene. But you need to help us out at this point, Jared, and explain to us what happened there.
I believe at this point I need to say stop, and I believe I need a lawyer.
Okay.
Because this has gone well beyond what I'm capable of, so.
They now had two suspects in custody. And as for that drug dealer story, Detective Stokes says that was just a hoax Jesse cooked up to throw off police. And she told the story to several people, including her neighbors, the Rays, who unwittingly corroborated her story.
Did you ever find any evidence that Vince was involved in some type of drug deal gone bad?
No.
That men were out to get him and his family?
No, we did not. We couldn't find anything that would take us there other than her story.
Janet, Vince's surrogate mom, was horrified when she learned that Jesse, the woman who had seemed so good for Vince, was now implicated in his murder.
I was devastated. I was like, why is she arrested?
Did you think she was capable of killing
Never.
Vince?
Never. Why? There's divorce. Why wouldn't she just get a divorce?
Do you swear or affirm that the statement you've given is true to the best?
But even with Jesse's story and the evidence against Jared, the case was far from closed. An unexpected twist was about to put the whole investigation into a tailspin.
Did you worry that one or both of them could get away with murder?
Coming up, prosecutors face a major setback.
I was livid.
Is their case about to collapse?
I was devastated all over again.
Prosecutor Lynn Pryor already felt she had a solid case against Jared Long. And after his arrest, police found even more evidence in his truck.
There was one spot of blood that belonged to Vincent Goslin on the backpack of Jared Long.
This is bingo right here.
This is more evidence than I've had in most of the murder cases I've prosecuted.
How do you explain the victim's blood on your backpack when you're hundreds of miles away?
You can't, unless you're the person that killed him.
But Pryor knew the case against Jesse wasn't as airtight.
It was very much a circumstantial case because there was no physical evidence implicating her.
Did you worry that that wouldn't be enough to get a conviction?
Somewhat, yes. Jared Long was not willing to give us anything to help out with regard to implicating Jesse. But we knew that it was her involvement that got Jared to where Vincent was killed.
How were you going to prove that?
With her own words.
But then entered defense attorney Mark Bryant. He represented Jared Long, and he had a plan that could benefit Jesse too.
His strategy was to get Jesse's interview with police thrown out. And how would he do that?
Mrs. Goslin had told the local police department that she didn't want to talk, that she wanted a lawyer.
I wanted an attorney, and I wanted to know what my husband is.
And so under the law, you have to break up any questioning. And they did. And they sent her back home to Fort Campbell.
But you might remember after that, her friend convinced Jesse to go speak to the military police on base.
Jesse Goslin spent 8 hours with the police. After that very day, she said she wasn't going to talk without a lawyer. So it was just a different police agency.
Bryant argued in front of a circuit judge. Since Jesse had already asked for a lawyer, the military police should never have questioned her. The judge agreed.
He made a decision that confession that she made implicating our client should be set aside because the law enforcement agency for the military police should have followed the same rules that the earlier police department in Christian County had followed during that day.
Jesse Goslin's statement was thrown out. The news hit Vince's family hard.
Hearing the news that Vince was killed was horrible. But what the justice system did was unfair. When they threw that out of court, I was devastated all over again. And we thought that she was going to walk away. We thought that they were going to get away with it.
But Prosecutor Pryor wasn't going down without a fight. She filed a motion with the Kentucky Court of Appeals. Jesse and Jared, meanwhile, were out and about, relatively free.
How did you feel about both Jesse and Jared being out on house arrest with just ankle bracelets?
I was livid. I argued to the best of my ability to the judge about why someone that was charged with such a heinous murder should be out on an ankle monitor. And none of the arguments that I made were convincing to the judge.
Then everyone waited and waited. 4 long years went by before the appeals court finally reached a decision and sided with the prosecution.
What's that moment like when you get word that it's been overturned and that the statement will be allowed?
I was very much relieved.
Pryor considered her options and concluded that of the two, Jared deserved the harshest punishment.
Jared Long was the one who pulled the trigger 9 times. Jared Long was the one who took the life of Vincent Goslin. So we wanted to make sure he received the maximum punishment that he could for this crime.
To do that, the prosecutor needed not only Jesse's videotaped statement, she needed Jesse to tell a jury the whole story, that she and Jared planned to murder Vince.
We needed her testimony about the reasons why they planned to kill Vincent and the way that they planned it out.
So the prosecutor made an offer. If Jesse pleaded guilty to complicity to murder and would testify against Jared, she would recommend a sentence of 22 and a half years behind bars.
She agreed to this plea deal?
She did, after long talks and very heated discussions.
The prosecutor had a deal. That means the woman who had played the victim, betrayed her husband and lover, will be eligible for parole in 2031.
Some people think the sentence is too light.
I don't disagree with that, that the sentence was too light. But after discussions with law enforcement, with family members, we determined that it was worth it to have her to be able to say in her own words what happened and why.
A different prosecutor then took over the case against Jared Long, Commonwealth attorney Mark Blankenship. And as he looked over the case, he came to a different conclusion about who was most responsible.
I felt that the mastermind of the crime was Jesse. She didn't pull the trigger, but without her, this doesn't happen. What bothered me was that the bar got set at 22 years for the mastermind of the crime.
So Blankenship did what he thought he had to be fair, and offered Jared a deal too. 30 years in prison for pleading guilty to first-degree murder. Jared agreed.
Jared, at times, is sort of being portrayed as this kind of victim, a little bit of Jesse, that she was the mastermind. But Vince was shot 9 times in the head and the face.
Oh, I know.
Mean, you cannot discount that.
No.
For anything.
No, it bothers me. He should have gotten more than 30 years.
Tim, Vince's cousin, was torn about Jared's punishment.
Jesse. She should have got more time than he did. Because she manipulated him.
Is that the Jesse you knew? This master manipulator?
Obviously, she must have been manipulating us because I would have never pegged her.
I believe that she should do life.
As for Janet, the woman who stepped in as Vince's mother, it's hard for her to describe the pain she feels. She watched her surrogate son go from a tough kid to a tough soldier. He became a good and honorable man, only to have it all, needlessly, taken away.
He wasn't my biological child, but my heart. You can't tell that to my heart. I love that boy. And it's not fair that he was taken from his children or from his family. He had so much potential. He had gone so far.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.